Hey, it's Nishant, and welcome to Higher IQ. It's Monday, June 29th. I just read a statistic that the average person spends about 5 hours per day on their phone, which adds up to around 74 days a year. I remember back in the day when I was in middle school, I didn't have an iPhone. I was using my Motorola Razr, and the only reason I would use it was to text my friends. Now I'm watching YouTube videos, listening to music on Spotify, watching movies, which before the iPhone really wasn't possible. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because on June 29th, 2007, the first iPhone went on sale. And the behind-the-scenes story of how it got to that point is one of the wildest things I've ever read, because the device that changed the world was barely functional on the day that it was introduced to the public. The demo that Steve Jobs gave 5 months before launch was held together by faked signal bars, a hidden cell tower, and a script so precise that tapping the wrong app would crash the phone on live television. The most important product launch of the 21st century was basically a magic trick performed by a guy in a turtleneck who rehearsed it for 5 days straight. All right, let's get to it. On January 9th, 2007, Steve Jobs walked onto the stage at Macworld in San Francisco and introduced the iPhone. The audience saw a seamless, confident demonstration of a revolutionary device. But what was actually happening behind the curtain was closer to controlled chaos. The prototype had 128 megabytes of memory. For context, the phone in your pocket right now probably has 50 times that. The apps on the demo units were incomplete and bloated. If Jobs tried to play a full song or a full video, the phone would crash. If he opened apps in the wrong order, the phone would freeze. The engineers discovered through trial and error that there was exactly one sequence of actions, one specific path through the demo, where the phone would survive the full presentation without crashing. They called it the golden path. Email first, then Safari. Not the other way around. One wrong tap, and the whole thing goes dark on stage in front of the global press. Jobs wanted to make a live phone call during the demo, which meant AT&T had to install a portable cell tower inside the auditorium. Even with the cell tower 10 feet away, the team wasn't confident that the phone would connect reliably, so they hard-coded every demo unit to display 5 bars of signal strength, regardless of the actual connection. So just so you know, the signal bars were fake. It's possible that the phone wasn't even connected at all, but on the projection screen, it looked perfect. Multiple backup iPhones were staged on a table so that Jobs could quietly swap devices if one crashed mid-demo. The camera was set up to never film the iPhone screen directly because the engineers had built custom circuit boards to extract the video signal and send it straight to the projector, avoiding any chance that the audience might see a glitch, a loading screen, or even a reboot. And the engineers? Well, they were all in the fifth row doing shots of scotch. Andy Grignon, the senior engineer in charge of all the phone's wireless features, apparently told the New York Times that after each section of the demo, whoever was responsible for that piece would take a shot. By the time Jobs got to the finale, where he played music, took a call, put it on hold, took a second call, emailed a photo, and then looked something up online all in sequence without switching devices, the engineering team had drained the flask. The demo had worked. It really shouldn't have, but it did. And here's the part that messes with my head when I think about it. The device that changed the world launched without the most of the features that we now consider essential. There was no app store. The apps that came on the phone were the only apps that you had. Steve Jobs was initially against third-party apps entirely. He told developers that they could build web apps that ran in Safari. And when his own executives pushed him to allow native apps, his response was reportedly, "Oh hell, just go for it and leave me alone." The App Store launched a full year later, in July 2008, with 500 apps. And today, there's over 2 million. Another thing you couldn't do? Copy and paste. You couldn't just select text, copy it on the original phone, and then paste it somewhere. That feature didn't arrive until 2009, 2 years after the launch. Also, no video recording. The camera could take photos, but couldn't shoot video. No GPS turn-by-turn navigation. No MMS, meaning you couldn't send a picture and a text message. No multitasking either. You couldn't run two apps at the same time. And the phone? It actually cost $500 and required a 2-year contract with AT&T, the only carrier that would have it. 2 months after launch, Apple dropped the price by $200, and the backlash from early buyers was so intense that Jobs had to issue a public apology and offer partial refunds. And yet, people lined up around the block for it. Apple sold 6.1 million units in the first year, not because of what the phone could do on day one, but because of what it felt like to hold it. The touchscreen was unlike anything else on the market. Scrolling with your finger and then watching the screen bounce at the bottom after you got to the end of a list, it just felt like the future. Jobs was selling a vision, and the people bought the vision, even though the product wasn't finished. The engineers who faked the signal bars and rehearsed the golden path had created just enough magic to make people believe. When the iPhone launched, Nokia controlled 51% of the global phone market. BlackBerry was the phone every business professional carried. Palm made the Trio. Microsoft had Windows Mobile. All of them had physical keyboards, and all of them thought that the iPhone was just a toy. Unfortunately, all those brands that I just mentioned are either dead or irrelevant. By 2013, 6 years after the iPhone launched, Nokia's smartphone market share had collapsed below 3%. The company that sold 463 million phones in 2007 sold just 4.4 million in 2013. BlackBerry went from the phone that every executive needed to the phone that nobody wanted. Whenever I think about BlackBerry, I remember the Office episode where Ryan was trying to introduce Dunder Mifflin Infinity and wanted Michael to start using a BlackBerry. And there was a scene that he was like trying to type on the small keyboard and like he just didn't like it and couldn't figure it out. And the interesting thing about that is that when all of these companies, including BlackBerry, saw the iPhone and concluded that it would fail because it didn't have a keyboard, the battery life was bad, and it was locked to one carrier, they were right about all three criticisms and wrong about everything that mattered. The ripple effects went far beyond the phone industry. Gum sales dropped 15% after 2007 because people stopped looking around at checkout lines. They were looking at their phones instead. Over a trillion digital photos are now taken every year, 85% on phones. GPS location plus mobile internet created Uber, Lyft, and every food delivery app that exists. The iPhone's camera created Instagram. Its app ecosystem created the entire app economy, which generates hundreds of billions in revenue annually. The phone replaced maps, flashlights, alarm clocks, scanners, video cameras, calculators, iPods, and physical wallets. Apple has sold over 3 billion iPhones, and 1.5 billion people use one actively every day. And quick connection to last week's QWERTY episode that I just can't stop thinking about. When Apple designed the iPhone's keyboard, the most advanced touchscreen device ever created, they put the exact same 1870s QWERTY layout on it. They had a completely blank canvas. No physical keys, no mechanical constraints, total freedom to rethink how humans interact with letters on a screen. But they still chose the layout that was designed to prevent typewriter jams 130 years earlier. Path dependency followed us all the way from Remington's factory to Steve Jobs' stage. The most revolutionary product of the century kept the most outdated input system in technology because that's what people already knew. So as you use your phone today or even this week, this is what you should think about. 19 years ago today, the first iPhone went on sale. The demo, 5 months earlier, was held together by faked signal bars, a hidden cell tower, backup devices, and a script so precise that just one wrong tap would crash the phone on live television. The engineers were doing shots of scotch in the fifth row. The phone launched without an app store, without copy and paste, without video recording, and without GPS navigation. And it cost $499 on a single carrier. Steve Jobs was initially against allowing third-party apps at all. And today, there's over 2 million of them, and they generate hundreds of billions of dollars in revenue. And one of the things I found funny about this episode was that chewing gum sales dropped 15% because instead of looking at the candy and gum by the checkout line, people were glued to their phones. And also, the keyboard on the most advanced device ever made uses the same layout that was designed to prevent typewriter jams in the 1870s. The most important product launch of the century was a magic trick performed on a broken phone. And the trick worked, and the world has not been the same since. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.